And you're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Today is Christmas Eve, and Margot Patterson will be talking with Dion Hare and Macy Jones about Christmas Behind Bars. Dion and Macy also will discuss the loss of hope and faith and how their study and acceptance of Islam allowed them to survive and prevail. Later on in our show, a calendar of events and the ACLU Minute. Now, here's Margot, Dion, and Macy.
This is Margot Patterson with Jaws of Justice Radio, and we are here talking to Macy Jones and Dion Hare about what Christmas is like for the men and women serving time behind bars in our country's prisons. And Macy and Dion, could you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Yes. You stated my name is Macy Jones, and I was incarcerated for over 20 years, and I was in Missouri State Penitentiary, I was in Mobley Correctional Center, and I've only been out 3 years. I was released September the 29th of 2009, and September the 29th of this year made my 3 year. I celebrated that 3 years because it's beautiful to be free, you know.
And Dion.
Yes, my name is Dion Hare. First of all, I want to thank you for having me on your show. I also have been incarcerated over 20-something years. I got out in 2007. Unfortunately, I went back about 2009, but since I've been out so far, it's been a total of 19 months. Again, it's a blessing. It's definitely a blessing.
Well, before we get to talking about Christmas and how it's celebrated in prison, I'm curious, what did you two go to prison for?
I went to prison for committing of murder.
And Dion?
Same for second-degree murder.
Well, it's December 24th, and I am very ignorant of what Christmas is like for those people in prison. Tell us from your experience what you found there. What was December 25th like?
December the 25th? For me, incarcerated was just another day, because I, you know, when I went to prison, I didn't have any concept of ever being free again. So living in that mindset, every holiday is just that, another day.
Was Christmas celebrated?
Yes, prison was celebrated in Christmas. However, I had to make a transition into even thinking that holidays should mean anything at all.
It was celebrated to the point to where, you know, you had administrative that would take money from the inmate canteen that was allotted to even pass out so-called, they call it goodie bags and things like that. Then you had certain churches that came up in the chapel and put on programs for inmates to come and share and rejoice, things like that. And you had other organizations also, too, that maybe perhaps inmate organizations that perhaps participate in it. Within their own organization to celebrate Christmas also too. But like Macy said, that Christmas, I mean, like another day. You know, you wake up, you plan your day, you hopefully that nothing happens. But also the administration also puts, like they call, a little meal. It be turkey, sometimes be dressing. It really depends. You know, they might have pie, something like that. But I guess it's the thought that it counts.
And when you think, if I may, and when you think the mentality of what Christmas is supposed to represent, the gathering of family. If you had children, a wife, you know, you now here you are, you sitting in a cell while they are on the other side of them walls or them fences without. And now the festive part of it seems to be diminished a little bit.
Oh, of course. Well, I'm wondering, did the prison authorities allow family visits on Christmas Day?
If I believe it's an occasion that it has been, but if Christmas falls like on a Tuesday, because currently I think right now visits are on Thursdays, Friday, and Saturday and Sunday. So by Christmas being on the Tuesday, it's 50-50, and it really depends on what level the camp is. Level 5, maybe not. Maybe level 2 camp institution, yes, it may be.
Well, tell us what these levels mean, level 5, level 2. What's that all about?
Level 5 is more your maximum security institutions. Your level 2 camps are the institutions where the custody level is not as high, the risk of wanting to get away.
and to add to that, and you have less aggressive inmates. So, and also that individuals who may come to jail for 30-year sentence, have a life sentence or life in 50, you know, those are where you'd be at the maximum security penitentiary, where the Jeff City, which is called, the street is called No More Hope.
Yeah, No More Victims.
Yeah, No More Victims. So then if you happen to get a date by the parole board, then they drop your level 2, level 4, level 3. It really depends, because sex offenders, they can never be dropped to a level 1, level 2. They must remain as a high level risk, period.
Well, I'm thinking that Christmas can be a difficult day for people outside prison. You know, there are so many expectations. Many people find it hard to handle the Christmas season. How about inmates? Do you think Christmas is a harder day than normal? I'm sure that there's a huge variety because everyone is different. But is that a hard day for people inside prison?
Oh, definitely, for sure. Because the hardest thing about that is when you call home. When you call home and you have children, and your children so used to you being there, providing for them, especially for this one day. And all of a sudden, when you call, you hear your family in the background. You may hear children cry, laughing, things like that. That type of joy will definitely bring that type of hurt and sorrow in your heart, because then here it is. You the ones missing, especially when somebody say, hey, we having fun, brother. We this, that. But guess what? You know, everybody's here. You're the only one that's missed. That right there would drop the bomb on anybody's elevator.
A lot of us didn't call home during that time due to the simple fact that, you know, it's like getting a visit. You get a visit, and when visiting hours is over with, you know, you seeing your loved ones walk out the door, and you know, you still here. So a lot of us didn't call home because we didn't want that to make our time harder, or the emotional responses that come from hearing your loved ones over the telephone in a festive environment.
What was your daily routine like, and was it any different on Christmas? I mean, did anything change in terms of what you would normally be doing?
No. The daily routine consists of count time 4 times a day.
Now, what's count time?
Is where the officers come by and make sure that the amount of bodies are still left in the institution. If the count, say, for instance, you had an institution that holds 1,800. If they got less than 1,800 there, that means somebody then got what we call ghost or escaped or hidden, whatever, or missing. So it's like end of the day. They got count time. Everywhere in prison is a line. If you go to breakfast in the morning, if you go to lunch, if you go to dinner, like I said, the shower will still be on. You still have people playing cards or playing dominoes, reading books. The library may not be open. The chapel will be open. Then, like I said, it's just a daily routine. Nothing changes. Everything's repetitious.
And how do you spend your time between breakfast and lunch?
Working. But on Christmas, seeing how they're, you know, we're not having to work if you didn't work in the dining hall.
So you had the day off.
Watching football.
Well, that was my question. So you'd have the day off from working on Christmas Day.
Some would have the day off.
Christmas is become for many people a secular holiday, but of course it's really a religious holiday. Are either of you Christian?
No, I'm not. I'm a Muslim. I believe in I'm a part of a Muslim faith in Islam. My background is Christianity, but as you become older and you do your research and things, you know, you pave your own path.
And Macy?
I as well am a Muslim. However, that word Christian in the concepts of the doctrines that are being presented, I'm not Christian in that sense. But I am a Christian in the principles that come from Jesus Christ himself.
I think of prisons as being perhaps God-forsaken places. By that I mean sort of desperate places. But of course, I would think in God-forsaken places, many people might seek out God more or seek out some kind of religious faith. That sounds like maybe it was your experience. And is that common, do you think?
It it's not the experience in the beginning. You know, when you sent to prison, you ain't sent to prison with any hopes. As the sign said, when we got there, leave all your hopes and dreams behind. You are now entering the Missouri State Penitentiary. So you're not going there with any ideals or concepts of having anything ever again. So in the beginning, no, that's not the common. Later on, as time passes and things begin to change and you begin to change within yourself and your attitudes and maybe begin to see some semblance of hope, then, you come into a spiritual awakening.
As a child, our mothers tell us to believe in God, to talk to God. So when you're in a prison, one thing that you're going to know, if you don't have a friend, the only friend you're going to have is who? It's God himself. Some people do take the religion and maybe for the wrong reasons, but you have to remember, you have to revert to back when your mother had taught you is to believe.
This is Margot Patterson with Jaws of Justice Radio, and we are here talking to Macy Jones and Dion Hare about Christmas in prison, the role of faith for prisoners. How many years were you in prison before you started seeking out some kind of religious faith?
I was in prison 10 years before I finally decided that, hey, one day I was sitting in a cell and I said, hey, you know, if there's a God, then I'm going to ask you something. If you real manifest yourself to me, show me, give me some sign. You gave Moses one in the burning bush, you know, hey, all the time hearing people talk about God, and every Sunday morning when you cut on the TV, that every channel you turn to, you know, with some preacher on there talking and saying this about God, 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 and God talked to him and he talked to you. Okay. So I wanted him to talk to me.
Well, is there a lot of talk about God in prison with your fellow prisoners?
Definitely, for sure. You know, you always have what they call wars. And I say war, I don't mean physically. I mean, you know, mentally, where you have those individuals who doesn't understand actually the word God or don't understand what religion is. You're always going to have soul searchers, no matter where you at, in prison or out of prison. You got people out here today that are searching.
And along in accords with what he's expressing, even among those who profess to already be either a Christian, Muslim, Jew, or whatever, they themselves have the misconcepts of each other. So in having the misconcepts of what a Muslim is, or having a misconcept of what a Christian is, here it is, the Christian and the Muslims are having dialogue as to, you know, who's right and who's wrong. And here I am, the individual that may be trying to find God. Now I'm trying to figure out where I need to be at.
Exactly.
So we sit down and we listen. So, yes, there is that takes place, just like out here in society, where the Muslims are misunderstood and the Muslims are misunderstanding the Christians and individuals talking about, you know, that they going to heaven as opposed to others going to heaven. Well, hey, you know, for a man incarcerated right now, he in hell and he trying to make sure that he can find the heaven. But then he gets them conflicts as well.
I know there are a lot of people who have become Muslims in prison. I'm curious why, what the perception of Christianity is, and what the draw of Islam is.
Well, you have in prison, throughout the state prisons, you have the Morrisons Temple, which is a conscious organization. They believe in what Marcus Garvey stood for and Jubal Ali. And also you have the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam, everyone knows that is headed by Farrakhan. And that particular time when the Nation of Islam came about, our people was very desperate in need for that believe in yourself. And then you have Islam. You're talking over 400 some years. Even in the Bible, it speaks about Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So personally, some people do come in straight into prison, join religion organizations for safety. And I hope in their heart that later on in life that they come to actually believe. Then you have some such as me and Macy, to where it took us over 10 years to actually, one, find ourselves. Second, you know, we had to stop doing the prison hustle, the prison things that and make sure that we got away from all the prisons, not only to make sure that if we take this religion, any religion we take, make sure we be serious about the religion.
Well, now, what's the prison hustle?
Oh, my goodness. I opened a can of worms, didn't I? A prison hustle can be, you know, selling cigarettes, selling coffee, selling potato chip, you know, things like that.
And along with what you was talking about earlier about Islam and why do individuals come to Islam in prison, the majority of us come from Christian background. And in coming from Christian backgrounds, you have the Christian doctrine that you receive from a child, but you never made the conscious choice yourself to accept Christianity as your way of life because you studied it for yourself and come to know that this is best for you and suits what God had intended for you. So in coming to prison, you came as a Christian, but once you got there, you heard about Islam. And in the studying it, because see, you just can't say I'm a Muslim and it's like, and that's what it is. You have to study first to know that this is what it is. So me being a Christian coming to prison, I had to study it. And in studying it, there were things that I come to find out that best suited me. To give an example, we know the story of where they talk about Jesus went into the temple and he turned the table over and whipped the people or the cows or something up out the temple, the money changers. Now, when individual hears that and then hear that Jesus turned the other cheek, now there's a conflict in the mind, and then you see in society that somebody gets smacked that says he's a Christian, but he ain't turned no other cheek. So now you're wondering, what was these principles and these teachings really all about? So in the studying of Islam, the doctrine of Jesus dying on the cross, these are the things that separate Christianity. Jesus dying on the cross is the only thing that separate a Christian, those with the label Christian from a Muslim, those with the label Muslim. When we look at the principal teachings of Jesus and the teachings of Islam, then we come to find out Jesus fast.
There's no difference. The only different variations that we actually have or any conflict that may appear or develop between Christianity and Islam is that when they say Jesus is the Son of God. And we as Muslims, we are known as Jesus as being noble, great prophet, never the Son of God. We never associate anybody with God himself or equal.
Because then you'd have to say that Mary was Jesus' mother. So what does that make her?
And in my token, I got put out of Sunday school one day because I thought that Adam should have been the Son of God. That's what deterred me away from Christianity, because the story that the questions I was asking, could no one come up with them? And I think that getting put out of Sunday school at a young age was kind of, you know,
rough, was
rough. So, you know, not saying that they pushed me towards Islam, because like you said, you have to study. Like, you know, that's the difference there it is. You know, that's when a Christian said, and it's a lot of Christians that acknowledge that he's not the Son of God or he's not God himself.
You know, you mean there are a lot of people who call themselves Christians who think that?
Right.
Yes, yes. And then I know of plenty of them that know for a fact that he, in other words, when somebody pray, they might say, oh, Jesus, and they pray through Jesus to God.
I'm wondering if the popularity of Islam has to do with the Muslim chaplains are more effective or better teachers than the Christian chaplains there?
No, the Islam really came from the men themselves that were incarcerated. This was the establishment of it. It wasn't a chaplain that had the influence. It was the men who were sitting in a cell right along with you that you seen something in his character or you seen something about him, the peace or the tranquility that he had that made it possible for you to, hey, what you got? I need some of that, man.
Yeah.
And how do you think religious faith has helped you, or how did you see it helping other people in prison, whether it was Islam or Christianity or another religion, perhaps?
Actually, peace, humility, it humbles you. It, you know, to be able to practice something that, one, will bring joy to you. When you read the history of Islam and know about the hereafter, know about the things that takes place at the hereafter, me per se is that so many bad things have happened to me after other, you know, some people call it bad luck, some people call it karma with the K, but my life has changed. My life changed. And to say that it helped me, it made me discipline myself as far as who I am, what I want to go, what I want to do, and how to get to the things that I need to do. And also it helped me to want to better myself and present myself not only as this barbaric individual some people may perhaps think of me, but one thing about it, know that I'm a man. I learned that through education and Islam, I knew that can no number, color, nickname grade me higher than I could grade myself as a man. I learned one thing. It's not what they call me, it's what you answer to.
And it's life. Simply put it like he said, you live. You come to life. Whether you be a Christian, Muslim, if you live according to the principles, if you live according to the principles that you've been given, according to your teachings, then you come to life. Because we went in dead, you know.
Yes,
we went in
yes,
dead.
Yeah.
We was considered a beast, an animal. When you put somebody in a cage, when you put someone in a cage, you considering them dead. The incarcerated citizens, which we call them incarcerated citizens, when they was put in them cages, they wasn't put in them cages to live. You been to the zoo? When you see a gorilla, is that gorilla happy? You know, no. So his spirit is crushed. So the same principle applies for the incarcerated citizens. They didn't go in there alive. They went in dead. But once they heard life-giving principle, I'm going to say principle, then they came to life. Then you come to life. Now you live. When you start living, then your walk change. Mm-hmm. Your talk change and your actions change.
Complexion.
Then after that, something else happened. The God that you say that you believe in, the one true God, makes a way for you. Because now you cry out to him and you call to him and say, hey, open up these doors for me. Open up these doors. And once he opens up the doors, now you on this side to try to be an example. See, there's been a lot of men and women that have come out of prison and don't went back. That happened. You become alive.
Dion and Macy, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me.
Today, we are rolling out a new zero-tolerance policy for schools.
I'm singer-songwriter Patty Larkin, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
The motivation? The case of 8-year-old David Morales from Coventry, Rhode Island, who glued tiny plastic army action figures onto a camouflage baseball cap and wore it to school. And the problem is? The problem is that David's school has what it calls a zero-tolerance policy for weapons. And the tiny toy soldier glued onto the second grader's hat violated that policy. People complained, of course. And Superintendent Ken DiPietro eventually admitted that, quote, the events exposed how a policy meant to ensure a safe environment can prevent an image counter to the work of our schools to promote patriotism and democracy. And he went on, support the military. Wow. The superintendent apparently still doesn't get it. Would an army action figure in an art class with an international peace sign drawn over it still be illegal in his schools? So, here's the new proposed zero tolerance policy. The policy will say that the school will have zero tolerance for any zero tolerance policy applied in a manner that is stupid, counterproductive, teaches bad lessons, hurts students, and does violence to the Constitution.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU at ACLU.org. So let me sing my song. Support the ACLU because freedom can't defend itself.
And now we're going to do the Jaws of Justice calendar. First call, Alcohol Drug Prevention is asking for nominations for community champions to be recognized at the 2013 Community Gratitude Luncheon in April. Award categories are Lifetime Achievement, Public Service Award, Philanthropist of the Year, Professional of the Year, and Volunteer of the Year. Nominations are due February 11 by 2013. For information on the nominations, contact Michelle Irvin, Director of Outreach at 816-361-1455, extension 113, or email her at Michelle, that's M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E-I, at firstcallkc.org. Tomorrow, Christmas Day, Voices of the People, GYRL, I Am My Brother's Keepers, and Mo State when Missouri State Representative Brenton Ellington are sponsoring a community Christmas dinner from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Destined for Glory Center at 4238 Prospect Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. Everyone is welcome. You can find these items and more and on the JOJR, Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Jaws of Justice Radio.
This is Marco Patterson.
Ready? One, two, three. Here in my problem, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it some way, somehow? Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know. Maybe I'm supposed to cry if nobody ever knows the way I feel. That's alright, that's okay, cause I'm gonna
make
my world a
better place.
Gonna keep
that smile on my face.
Yeah, I'm gonna
teach
myself
how to understand.
Gonna make myself a better man. Out the window, climbing up the wall. Is anybody gonna save me? Or are they gonna let me fall? Well, I don't really wanna know. I'm gonna hold on the best I can. And if I fall down, I'm gonna get back up, and it'll be alright. It'll be okay, cause I'm gonna make
my world a better place.
Gonna keep that smile
on my face.
Lord, I'm gonna teach myself
how to understand.
Gonna
make myself a better man.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. If you have comments or questions, check out the Jaws of Justice radio page on the KKFI website. That's www.kkfi.org. You can join the Jaws of Justice radio group by emailing us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. My name is Jeff Humfeld, and we thank our engineer, Sister G of Sunset Reggae. Listen in tomorrow at 9 a.m. for Law and Disorder. Activist Ralph Pointer updates us on Attorney Lynn Stewart's health and appeals of her conviction on aiding terrorism, and a speech by Michael Ratner on the Bradley Manning case. Up next is Counterspin, followed at 10 o'clock by Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for jazz and blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m.